Hello, and welcome to Learning English, the daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America in Washington. This program is designed to help people like you learn everyday American English. This is what you will hear on today's program. In our weekly higher education report, correspondent Phil Dierking will tell us how schools and universities are teaching their students about fake news. Then, you will hear Words and Their Stories, one of our most popular programs. This week, Anna Mateo will tell us about some of the many American English expressions using words from the garden. And we will present The Making of a Nation. Now, here is higher education correspondent Phil Dierking.
In the past, most people received their news from newspapers, magazines, and broadcasters. But now, just about anyone can report and publish on the internet and share it as news through social media. The problem: not all of the information is true, and not all of the reporting is trustworthy. After the presidential election last November, many people even questioned whether fake news had influenced the election results. This has led Facebook to work with organizations to find out whether a disputed story is true or false, and educators to train students to become responsible readers of news. The term fake news is complicated because it is not always clear what that means. People have used the term to identify everything from news stories reporting false facts to stories reporting facts they disagree with. Howard Schneider, a former editor of the newspaper Newsday, started the Center for News Literacy at Stony Brook University in 2007. The center has multiple projects, but the most visible is a course to teach news literacy. The course trains students to look for various details that may indicate the validity of the story. Does the body of the story actually relate to the headline? Are there a lot of overstated or extreme sentences? Are there facts in the story and can they be proven? Is it written by a well-known journalist? Richard Hornick is the director of overseas partnership programs for the Center for News Literacy. He says the problem of fake news really has two parts: stories with actual false information, and poor journalism in general. It's not about spotting a bogus or false piece. It's also about spotting a piece that could have been better. To quote Daniel Patrick Moynihan, a former senator from New York, "Everyone is entitled to their own opinions, but not entitled to their own facts." In some ways, Hornick says that Schneider anticipated the fake news crisis. He says his insight was that there is no point in training quality journalists if the public didn't really know the difference between journalism and something else. The University of Michigan, or UM, has a similar course to train students to research the validity of news stories and to be aware of biases. Doreen Bradley is the university's director of learning programs and initiatives. She says, "What is really an important step for people is realizing they don't come with an unbiased view, that they have a certain viewpoint." She gives this advice to students: take yourself out of your own current view and to appreciate someone else's we think is really critical for dialogue. Another problem, Bradley says, is the fact that most students are using Facebook and Twitter to get their news rather than going to more traditional news websites or publications. Michelle Shang is a third-year student at the University of Michigan. Shang finds that students either just stop reading the news or only take news from one source that they trust. A lot of people are jaded about the news. People are too busy to keep up with the news, and it is really easy to take whatever news is given to you because you don't have the time to figure it out yourself, she says. For her part, Shang recently created a digital exhibit for the university library of images to educate students on steps they can take to better analyze the news. Richard Hornick feels it is important to educate an even larger audience beyond American university students. Hornick and the Center for News Literacy have developed teaching resources as well as a free online news literacy course on Coursera. The news literacy courses have been taught at universities in Vietnam, Malaysia, Myanmar, Australia, Russia, Hong Kong, and Poland. They are also trying to reach a younger audience. They have partnered with several secondary schools in the American state of New York to teach news literacy. One school is the Intermediate School, or IS, 303 in Brooklyn Borough of New York City. The school uses various activities, like having students determine whether videos on YouTube were real or fake, or if websites are independently confirming their stories before printing them. According to the New York Times, IS 303 teacher Rema Kada tells her students to be selective about what they take and accept as truth, and to not accept somebody else's truth. They need to be ready to fact-check this world. Middle school is not too early to start, it seems. As Stony Brook University student Paola Pecorella says, news literacy should begin by the time you start interacting on the web, whether it's social media or any other kind of forum. Doreen Bradley of the University of Michigan says people should research and confirm what they read online. However, she says, to change human behavior is a difficult thing, but that really is the only thing that is going to help. Hornick agrees as well. The biggest problem is not getting people to be able to recognize bad journalism or fake news. The biggest problem is getting people to want to recognize it. Our brains are wired to seek out information that agrees with our current beliefs. I'm Phil Dierking.
Thanks, Phil. Now here is Anna Mateo to explain some of the American English expressions using words from the garden.
Now, the VOA Learning English program, Words and Their Stories. As the weather turns warmer, many people love to head outdoors to dig in the dirt, plant seeds, and watch them grow. Gardening is a very popular hobby, and it is one that produces wonderful results. Food for your dinner table and flowers for your home. Gardens themselves can be very beautiful. So you would think that a garden path is a great place to be. Well, in conversation, it is not. Leading someone up the garden path means you are trying to trick them. You are not trying to show them your beautiful flowers. Speaking of beautiful flowers, gardeners love to see small buds forming on their plants. Besides plants and flowers, people can bud too. If a child is good at drawing and painting, we can call him a budding artist. Or if someone just completed law school, we can call her a budding lawyer. So budding describes something that is beginning to develop. On the opposite end, you stop something from growing if you nip it in the bud. This is a common expression when we talk about stopping something bad and preventing it from continuing. It's good to nip small problems in the bud before they turn into big problems. Now, flowers that bloom are beautiful to see, even garden variety flowers. Garden variety describes anything that is common and not so special. You can have a garden variety cold, not a serious illness. You can have a garden variety problem at work, nothing special, just a common problem with a colleague. Now, a problem that many gardeners have is weeds. Weeds grow easily and can quickly take over a garden. In conversation, we sometimes use weeds to mean too many details. So, if you are in the weeds, you are taken over by too many details. Often, we put ourselves in the weeds. That usually happens when someone knows a lot about a topic. For example, let's say a politician is giving a speech on affordable housing, but she gives too much information on the legislative process needed to accomplish her goal. You could say, she is really in the weeds. People stopped listening to her 20 minutes ago. They just want to know if they are going to be able to buy a house or not. They are not interested in all these boring details. From politics to sports to movies, you can be in the weeds on any topic. As we said, weeds grow quickly. So do children. So we like to say that a child grows like a weed. This expression compares a child's fast growth to that of a weed. Saying a child grows like a weed does not compare a child to a weed in any other way, like being annoying or unwanted. So you can use it with family, friends, or even at work as you talk about your boss's child. Some weeds may not be pretty to look at, but flowers in full bloom are beautiful. Blooms that appear later than others can be among the most surprising. When a person is a late bloomer, it means they become successful, attractive, or develop a skill at a later time in life than other people. So being a late bloomer is a good thing. Being a blooming idiot is not. This insult describes someone who is lacking in common sense, severely lacking. And that brings us to the end of this Words and Their Stories. I'm Ana Mateo.
Inch by inch, row by row, gonna make this garden grow. All it takes is a rake and a hoe and a piece of fertile ground. Inch by inch.
Thanks, Ana. Now we present The Making of a Nation. This week in our series, Steve Ember looks at life in the United States during the 1990s.
For most of the 1990s, the nation was at peace. The Soviet Union collapsed in 1991, bringing an end to years of costly military competition. During the 90s, the American economy recovered from a recession and grew strong. Inflation and unemployment were low. There were new developments in medicine and technology. The Internet began to evolve from a defense project, mainly linking researchers, into a new way for the world to communicate. America grew by almost 33 million people during the 1990s, the largest increase of any decade in its history. By the end of the 90s, more than 280 million people were living in the United States. During the decade of the 90s, there was a large increase in immigration from Latin America, the Caribbean, and Asia. For the first time in 70 years, 1 in 10 Americans was born in another country. At the same time, the population was getting older. That added to the nation's health care costs. America's new president, Bill Clinton, promised to reform the health care system. But in the end, like other presidents before him, Clinton failed to win support for that idea in Congress. Divorce rates in the United States had begun to grow sharply in the 1970s. By the 90s, those rates were starting to drop. But there were millions of children living with only one parent or with their grandparents. Single-parent families are more likely to be poor. In 1980, single-parent households represented about 20% of all households in the United States with children. By 1990, that number had reached 24% and was continuing to rise. In 1991, a black man named Rodney King led police in Los Angeles on a high-speed chase. After the chase, officers tried to arrest him.
Now the story that might never have surfaced if someone hadn't picked up his home video camera. We've all seen the pictures of Los Angeles police officers beating a man they had just pulled over.
A man living nearby videotaped police officers striking King repeatedly with their sticks and kicking him on the ground. The officers later said King had resisted even after they shocked him with an electric stun gun. The man took the 81-second video to a local television station. Soon, people all over the country were watching it. The beating led to criminal charges against 4 white police officers. The trial was moved out of Los Angeles. Their lawyers argued that the officers might not receive a fair trial there. On April 29, 1992, a mostly white jury in a community north of the city returned its findings. The jury found the officers not guilty of assaulting Rodney King. Anger at the jury's verdict soon led to rioting that began in the largely poor black neighborhoods of South Central Los Angeles.
Don't go near this area. South Central Los Angeles at Florence and Normandy, because there is still no police presence there, and a lot of people trying to get through that intersection have been assaulted with rocks and bottles and sticks.
I just want to say, you know, can we all get along? Can we get along?
During the riots, Rodney King made an appeal to the public for calm.
Can we stop making it horrible for the older people and the kids?
More than 50 people died in days of violence before police and troops brought the unrest under control. Many more were injured, and hundreds of buildings were destroyed by fire. It was some of the worst rioting in American history and received worldwide attention. The following year, a federal jury found 2 of the officers who had beaten Rodney King guilty of violating his civil rights. They were sent to prison. Another case in Los Angeles that received international attention also involved a racial element. O.J. Simpson, a black former football star and motion picture actor, was charged with murdering his white former wife and a male friend of hers. They were stabbed to death in 1994. Many legal experts believed the case against Simpson was strong. So did many more whites than blacks in public opinion surveys.
The day Mr. Darden asked Mr. Simpson to try on those gloves and the gloves didn't fit, remember these words: if it doesn't fit, you must acquit.
Simpson's lead defense attorney, Johnny Cochran.
We, the jury, in the above entitled action, find the defendant, Orenthal James Simpson, not guilty of the crime of murder.
A mostly black jury found Simpson not guilty. But later, in a civil case brought by the victim's families, a mostly white jury found him responsible for the killings and ordered him to pay damages. In 1990, researchers launched the Human Genome Project. This was a government-supported effort to identify and map all of the genes in the body. The Human Genome Project raised hopes for new medical treatments and cures for diseases. The project lasted 13 years until 2003. In 2000, President Clinton announced the completion of a working draft of the genome.
It will revolutionize the diagnosis, prevention, and treatment of most, if not all, human diseases. In coming years, doctors increasingly will be able to cure diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, diabetes, and cancer.
During the 1990s, personal computers became more and more a part of everyday life. And more people were going online over a network linking computers around the world. The internet would grow into an easy way to send email, find information, and buy products over the World Wide Web. In music, many Americans in the early 90s were listening to a new sound from the Pacific Northwest. It became known as grunge rock. The capital for grunge bands was Seattle in Washington State. One of the best known bands was Nirvana. Their 1991 album, Nevermind, contains some of their most successful songs, including Smells Like Teen Spirit. Kurt Cobain helped define the grunge sound. He was Nirvana's lead singer, guitar player, and songwriter. But in April 1994, that voice was silenced. Officials said he killed himself with a shotgun. Kurt Cobain was 27 years old, the husband of singer Courtney Love, and one of the most influential musicians of his day. On television, millions of people watched shows like ER, a drama series about a busy hospital emergency room. Many fans tuned in to watch George Clooney play a young doctor on the show.
What's going on?
Mr. Abbott asked us to try to resuscitate his son.
Still flatline, atrophy and tube epi.
He shouldn't have made it through the night.
Who the hell are you?
I'm Dr. Ross. Look, he was in my care.
ER first went on the air in 1994 and lasted 15 years. Law and Order was a crime drama, but it took a different path, involving the interactions of police, lawyers, and judges. The popularity of the series, set in New York, led to several related Law and Order spin-off series. For laughs, millions of people watched shows like Seinfeld and Friends. No one told you that was gonna be this way. The Friends were Ross, Rachel, Monica, Phoebe, Joey, and Chandler, six young New Yorkers. Seinfeld was also set in, you guessed it, New York. It starred comedian Jerry Seinfeld playing himself. The series was hugely popular and won many awards. TV Guide magazine put it at the top of its 2002 list of the 50 greatest shows of all time.
Well,
I'm sorry, excuse me one second. Hello?
Hi, would you be interested in switching over to TMI long distance service?
Oh, gee, I can't talk right now. Why don't you give me your home number and I'll call you later?
Well, I'm sorry, we're not allowed to do that.
Oh, I guess you don't want people calling you at home. Well, now you know how I feel.
Seinfeld was, in the words of its creator, a show about nothing. But Jerry and his friends, Elaine, George, and Kramer, managed to find plenty of humor in life's everyday problems and situations. Another popular show in the 90s was the animated series The Simpsons, which, like Seinfeld, premiered in 1989. New episodes of The Simpsons, Homer, Marge, Bart, Lisa, and Maggie, continued into the 21st century.
Titanic was called the Ship of Dreams. And it was. It really was.
All right, open your eyes.
The 1997 film Titanic became the first movie to reach $1 billion in ticket sales at theaters worldwide.
You never know what hand you're going to get dealt next. You learn to take life as it comes at you.
When the ship docks, I'm getting off with you.
Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet played young lovers on the famous ship that sank in April 1912 after hitting an iceberg in the North Atlantic.
How fast are they?
Well, we clocked the T-Rex at 32 miles an hour.
You said you've got a T-Rex?
Uh-huh.
Say again.
We have a T-Rex.
Dr. Grant, my dear Dr. Thatcher, welcome to Jurassic Park.
Another popular film was Jurassic Park, released in 1993. In it, dinosaurs from prehistoric times are brought back to life, with disastrous results.
We're gonna make a fortune with this place.
In sports, baseball players went on strike in 1994. The World Series championship was canceled that year. In basketball, millions of fans were watching Michael Jordan lead the Chicago Bulls to championships. As the 90s came to a close, people around the world were preparing to celebrate the arrival of the year 2000. It was a big event, but there were also concerns about the millennium bug, or Y2K issue. This was the worry that older computers might not be able to recognize the calendar change. Lots of activity went into making sure things would go smoothly after midnight on December 31st, 1999.
In 2000, Americans elected the first president to lead the nation in the new millennium. But the election of George W. Bush resulted in a dispute that divided the nation. That will be our story next Sunday, here on Learning English. This Making of a Nation program was written by David Jarmul, Steve Ember, and Geraldyn Watson. It was presented and produced by Steve Ember, and we thank them all. That's our program for today. We hope it has informed and entertained you and has helped you learn everyday American English.